Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's the City of Palm Coast City Council Business Meeting, Tuesday, January 16, 2018. It is 9 a.m. Please join me in the pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland. Councilmember Cuff.
Here.
Nobile is excused. Council.
Present.
Councilmember.
We'll now have public participation. Any member from the public wish to speak on items not on the agenda, please come forward now to the podium. Please state your name, and your 3 minutes will begin following that.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. False impressions that if health issues from traffic fumes and traffic noise and dust are not noticeable right away, then there is no issue. Scientific studies tells us over time that the harm builds up until it manifests its harm as some kind of disease, such as cancer, heart disease, asthma, diabetes, just to name a few. False impressions that if the vehicles are moving, that the fumes and dust are not making its way into homes. How many of you would be willing to jog behind the heavy traffic on Florida Park Drive and say the fumes and the dust is not harming my health? From a Harvard study, it says within 300 to 600 feet of a busy road is where you'll find elevated levels of major pollutants. From Associated Professor of Environmental Health and Risk Assessment of the Harvard School. Florida Park Drive, according to FDOT, has approximately 8,600 cars per day, just 60 feet from the bedrooms of children. Many of these pollutants are carcinogenic. Another study says additionally, children have many more years ahead of them in which the accumulation of damage caused by auto emissions or can manifest itself as diseases or disability. Some of these diseases might even shorten their lifespan. The City of Palm Coast has known since 2003 that the traffic on Florida Park Drive has been heavy. It was said so in the minutes of January 2003. And yet, every project that has been in that area has added traffic to Florida Park Drive. What good is it if you go to a doctor if you're not willing to do what it is required to protect your health? What good is it to have scientific studies on what harms residents' health if the city officials would not do what it takes to protect the residents' health? Ignoring a doctor is intentionally harming your own health. So what is it ignoring scientific studies that harm residents from close when traffic is close proximity to the homes? So I would like to ask for this year is that the city do something to help prevent Florida Park Drive from being a thoroughfare to exchange traffic between the two parkways, Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Good morning, George Mayo, Palm Coast. As you may duly note later on, I'm not sure that you would, but I just want to remind the citizens that there is a meeting this Thursday night, 5:30, at the Community Baptist Church on Old Dixie Highway concerning the Florida DOT putting in a roundabout at the intersection of Old Dixie and US 1, the site of many fatal accidents. And it seemed in past meetings that I've attended that the county commission would be more interested in putting in a traffic light as opposed to a roundabout. But that will be discussed at that meeting. That is the DOT's plans to put in a roundabout. The public is invited at 5:30 to look, and then comments, and the meeting will take place at 6 o'clock. So anybody who travels there knows that intersection, knows what it's like. And if they have anything to view or say about it, that's the time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comments. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Carr, and thank you for your comments, George as well. Okay. We'll now entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the City Council December 19, 2017, meeting January 16, 2018 workshop.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number F2 is a presentation of the Pink Army 5K proceeds donation to the Florida Hospital Flagler Foundation Cancer Fund.
Who is that pink man? Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you all for allowing us to be here again on our annual check presentation day. I'm John Subers. I'm the director of the Florida Hospital Flagler Foundation. The Pink 5K, as we have done annually every year, I believe was our biggest and most successful one this year. A lot of that has to do with our community support. Hilga Van Eckert and Economic Opportunity once again was our chairman, and thank you, Hilga, with the support of Katrina Austin and Lily, who did so much for us. We have Sabrina Crosby here representing the school system, which provides all the outside the running race activities, from the youth orchestra to the cheerleaders to the colors and the national anthem and a lot of other things, and it's been great. Certainly, we could not do this without the support of the City of Palm Coast and Park Recreation. We missed Lauren this year, but she queued us up before she went to have a baby, but both Al, they were just wonderful. So we had a great time in the Parks and Recreation, great responsibility. So we have, we'd love a photo together with all of you, but more importantly, we're raising funds for breast cancer awareness and education. We have, since we started the Breast Cancer Fund, spent $120,000. With that, we have done 611 procedures on Flagler County residents, mostly women, but a few men, and have touched over 200 lives. All of that is very confidential information with regards to who the patients are, but I know we saved some lives with our treatment and our screenings and our education. So this money today helps put money back into our bucket so we can continue to do great things for the Flagler County residents and the men and women in our community on breast cancer. So with that, and I open it up to my fellow colleagues, of course, Chief Beadle and the city has always been there. The chief missed the 5K this year. That's a little bit of a dig, Chief. But your fire chief, your fire trucks and folks were there. Sometimes the firemen will run in their uniforms, which is always good. It makes us all feel, those that don't run in the uniform say, man, they did it. I can run a little faster. But we had a dog walk this year, which was a lot of fun. So with that, thank you very much.
Let's get a picture.
Before we get the photo, I just wanted to recognize a few people that really took part in this event, this annual event that means so much to our community. We cannot thank you enough. Florida Hospital Flagler is a great partner in many ways, offers world-class health care to our residents each and every day. We have a great Economic Opportunity Council that gives back to the community in many different ways, not just creating jobs. And our fire department, we're so very proud of each and every day for protecting our residents' lives, and of course our school district, top-notch school district, by the way, that is recognized statewide for all their great achievements, in not only academia, but technology. So we really want to recognize all our collaborative partners. And on behalf of Florida Hospital Flagler, Chief Beadle, I'm going to present you with this photo of our fire department holding the flag, showing pride.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you so much.
Nice.
Thank you. And we had our cheerleaders there as well, so I'm going to present to you, Sabrina, two great photos of our Next, we'll have a presentation, agenda item number F3, of the Flagler Schools and Flagler Cares on Mental Health Awareness. Harry Baird, I think Colleen Conklin on that shot.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I believe... Council members, thank you. Jim, Mr. Holland, Mayor Holland, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you today. As you know, before the hurricane, we had sent out an invitation for those of you who are an elected official to come and participate in an intergovernmental discussion, a roundtable around mental health awareness. Of course, Irma had different plans for us all. And after the hurricane, we decided to come and present actually a body of information that I know is all on all of our hearts and minds. So today, I have with me, you know me, right? I have Lynette Schott, who is our Director of Community Engagement. And we have Carrie Baird, who is the Director of Flagler Cares. And so the whole purpose, I'm going to share with you kind of the purpose, process, and payoff of our discussion today. And the hope is to really raise awareness, remove a stigma around mental health awareness, talk about the value and the importance of mental health services in our community, ask you to participate in that discussion in raising awareness and removing the stigma, and then also to talk about the payoff. This quote is very meaningful as we look about a community. Providing for and supporting good mental health is a public health issue, just like assuring the quality of drinking water or preventing and managing infectious diseases. Communities prosper when mental health needs and community members are met. I know every single one of you sitting here knows, and you've seen in the news recently, this continual outcry, really, for services. And so we must do better. I know we can do better, and I hope you'll engage in the conversation with all of us. And so now I'm going to ask Carrie Baird to come forward. She's going to share some data with you that has come directly from the community.
Good morning.
Good morning.
In late 2015, a community health needs assessment process was begun. It was commissioned by Florida Hospital Flagler, Florida Department of Health in Flagler County, Halifax Health, and Flagler Cares. And that was a year-long process where we looked at indicator data, we did a community survey, we had a leadership team, we did focus groups. Chief Beadle represented the city on our team. And through that year-long process, looking at literally 300 pieces of data, we came up with five priorities. And you'll see on the screen that two of those priorities are related to behavioral health. Maybe not what you would think a group of hospitals and healthcare providers would identify as the top need in the county. But nevertheless, adult mental health and substance abuse and youth mental health and substance abuse were prioritized. Next slide. This is just to give you an idea of who participated in the process. Again, it was a large leadership team. We had community meetings, and we really tried to engage the citizenry also in our process. We did a community survey to find out what citizens felt were priorities in Flagler County related to health and wellness. And when we asked the question, asked them to select five health issues they were most concerned about, you'll see that mental health was number four. Even when you had things like cancer and teen pregnancy listed on the list, mental health rose to the top. And when we asked them what services are most difficult to access in Flagler County, mental health and counseling was the number one response. Based on these findings, Flagler Cares was a developing organization at the time that we were going through the community health needs assessment process. So we decided as an entity to adopt those five priorities. And Flagler Cares' role is to develop infrastructure in Flagler County to address health and social service needs. So our focus on those priorities, especially those with mental health, have led us to develop a team in the community to look at mental health and suicide among youth and adults. So I'm going to let Lynette Schott's going to talk a little bit about our data and what the committee has been looking at.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mental health is not just an adult issue. It obviously also transitions down into our youth, and that is why we are a part of the partnership with Flagler Cares and with this initiative. So these are just a few more statistics that were gathered through the survey, as well as national or state statistics on specific areas that are often a peak point for mental health needs. Baker Acts are one of the ways that we track, both in the school district and I know in the community, the needs of our citizens. And I'm sure you're all familiar with Baker Acts, but to summarize, it's when an individual is a danger to themselves or others, and it's determined that they probably need some services to be hospitalized for up to 72 hours or longer. And mental health counselors, social workers, and law enforcement are the ones that have the ability to make that determination. So we, as a partner in this group, wanted to share a little bit about what's happening in our school district and what we are working with mental health. 2 years ago, we made the decision to rearrange a few of our resources and put some additional supports in the schools with our students. So we increased our number of school psychologists. We traditionally, in school districts, and if you look across the state and most states, psychologists will share anywhere from up to 3 to 4 schools where they are transitioning between the schools, and which limits, of course, their ability to work with the students other than for assessments and those types of pieces. So we made the commitment and have put psychologists. Our goal is to be one-to-one. We are one psychologist away from being one-to-one, so we've increased up to 8 psychologists in our schools. We've added social workers, mental health counselors, and licensed behavior specialists also to help support our students. And with that, we've seen some results. Prior to those changes, we had tracked 92 Baker Acts of our students. Now, we track what happens if they're Baker Acted off our campuses, and then the information that we have if they're Baker Acted out of the community. We do not always know when they're Baker Acted out of the community. If it's a family that is taking the child down, it doesn't necessarily, and they don't release the information to us, it doesn't necessarily get reported. But the law enforcement works very closely with us to keep us as informed as possible when they're involved. We reduced that down to 16. We have 20 of the semester. So we're on these, again, these stats show us that we transcend ages and that it's important that we be a part of the conversation. And This joint effort really is about raising awareness and raising the conversation so that individuals know to ask for help or to ask for help for someone else. And I'm going to hand this back over to Colleen.
Several years ago, actually it wasn't several years ago, but a few years ago, I engaged in the conversation of youth suicide because of a student that we lost and became very friendly, very close to a mother of Dalton Coxwell, Barbara Coxwell. And when we started looking at the data, we discovered that the suicide rates in Flagler County were, as far as the state is compared, where we should be concerned. But the other thing that became very obvious is when you start to look at the data, that students had a number of supports around them. But once they left the school system and you had transitional times in one's life, was when they were most vulnerable. So if you look at the data that I'm showing in front of you right now, you'll see that transition from, you know, in young adulthood, but then that transition again when maybe, you know, children are leaving or transitioning out of the home, or people are beginning to retire and they're not really sure about their next stage in life. And then again with our seniors, if you look at the population of our senior citizens, when again another transitional time period in their lives and they're facing many, many things that could be health related, it could be the loss of a spouse. But if you look very closely at the data, it's very telling about when these crises are occurring. And so the idea is for the school district anyway, we realize this is not a conversation that can happen in isolation. This is a community-wide conversation that we need to have from every age, every population, and that it really, if you look at the rate from just last year, the number that you're seeing in front of you is the unofficial number, that's 25 from October. We know that during the holiday time period, we have lost probably, we're probably over 30 for 2017. And so the hope, again, is to raise awareness for us to start the conversation. Nobody's asking for funding. Nobody's asking. But right now it is about having that conversation. It has to be a comprehensive community-wide conversation for all of us to engage. And so there are a number of best practices. This is just some from a national best practice on suicide prevention. And again, you'll see many of the things that we talked about, an increase in the helping of screening, providing services, identifying and assisting, responding to those crises, life skills, resiliency, the connectedness, making sure that people feel connected to our community, care and transitions, linkages to services that may be available. One of the things that we are looking at is a gap analysis of what services are really available, because once you find out that there are services available, it's a matter of communication, that people don't know that those services exist. And so on a local level, and this is kind of, you know, our call to action, if you will, community education and awareness, that everyone should understand the signs that they can look for. And if they do identify someone that is struggling with this, what do they do then? We're offering training and support. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. Carrie, I believe, is going to share about the training and support. Again, we're offering that as a to all of the elected bodies that we're visiting to train their staff, to make them aware. And then access to those health services. Again, everyone in Flagler County should know about where those services are, how they access them, and how they tap into them. Okay, and so today what we're specifically hoping to ask for is, one, your participation and interest in sitting on an intergovernmental committee around mental health awareness. It's not just suicide awareness for sure. It is seriously having a conversation about how we create a comprehensive community-wide plan to address this issue around mental health. The second is, we're hoping that you'll participate, and Lynette is going to hand out some documents, but we're hoping you're going to participate in a Flagler County video that would provide a message of hope, but also raise awareness and remove the stigma. You want to share a little bit more about that?
In the packets that Carrie gave you are just some sample clips out of a PSA that was developed in another school district, and it's just facts about mental health awareness. We are dedicating our resources to creating the PSA, which translates into Jason Wheeler's going to put together a nice PSA for us, and looking for individuals across the community representing leadership and people that are involved in all different parts of our community that would be willing to hold a sign for a snapshot, and then we'll put them together. And we have a list of facts about mental health that can be utilized, or if you have a personal statement that you would like to make on there as well, we'd be happy to work with you on that one as well. We gave you a postcard. We're trying to make it as simple as possible. If you would be interested in participating in the PSA, you can note on there your name, organization, and what you would be interested in participating in. They're pre-stamped and can be mailed back to us. You can hand it to us today if you want.
Or you can give it to us right now.
And Jason Wheeler's email address is on there, too, if you would prefer to just reach out electronically and let him know that you would be interested. And then we want to do this at your convenience. We'll travel to you and snap a picture if you're willing to be a part of it. And then the other piece that if you would be interested in participating in is, for the last several years, there's been a student group as well as the student support team, which are our psychologists, guidance counselors, all of our support people at Flagler Palm Coast High School, have participated in a nationwide program called Out of Darkness Walks, which is sponsored by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and they will be hosting that again this year on April 21st at Flagler Palm Coast High School, and we would love to have you come out and walk with us at that event and be a part of that awareness event as well.
And then the final piece that we would like to offer again is the training of your staff. Provide prevention and awareness information to all of your staff members. You're the second elected body that we've provided this presentation to. Bunnell has taken up the offer and will be providing training to their whole staff. Carrie, you want to share a little bit more about what the training entails?
Sure. The training model that we're recommending organizations like governments to consider is called Question, Persuade, and Refer. And it can be done in 2 hours. You could break it up and do two sessions over lunch or something like that. And it's basically just an introduction to understanding and seeing the signs in coworkers, colleagues, family members, neighbors, that someone might be having a mental health concern, understanding enough about community resources to make a referral, feel confident in what to say and what not to say when dealing with someone in crisis, and then making sure that they connect with services in the community. So we'd like to ask that you consider potentially hosting a training. We can provide the trainer and the materials for leadership, staff, or the community.
No cost.
Yes.
To hosting. Hosting is location. So, and then finally, we'd like to share that we will be launching, Flagler Cares is working on right now, basically a website, Flagler Lifeline, Hope, Help, and Healing, a place online where members of our community can go if they are in need of help, if they have a family member or a loved one or a friend who is in need of help and they're looking for resources. Again, mental health is essential to the well-being and health of our community. Prevention does work. Treatment is effective, and people recover from mental health disorders if given those services and opportunity. We thank you for your time today. It's not always an easy discussion, not one that anyone really wants to have, but one that's necessary to have. So thank you again for your time.
Well, and thank you for bringing forth this conversation. It's an important one. I have been touched very personally in a very profound way with mental health issues in my family that has affected all of us in many different ways. And I can't think of a more important topic or conversation to have as a community. The cost also associated, I think when we look at our inmate facility, our jail, there is a profound connection when you look at mental health issues, drug and alcohol abuse related issues to crime that happens in our community. And so from a cost effective perspective as well, the more we can do to offer those services to those that are in a moment of crisis really does change the conversation. Then you're actually helping someone who not only is struggling, but becoming productive members of our community and giving back in different ways. So I think there's a lot of potential here to collaborate and coordinate.
I'd like for us to participate in training for our staff as a moment, if they can see anything, probably from our leadership team, Jim, if you can look into that.
Our training ladies in the audience.
Okay.
So they can hook up today.
That's great. Yes, and so, and I think we've all filled out these cards, so you can collect those now as well. And, you know, definitely let us know how we can continue to participate and help and meet the needs of this topic.
On a closing note, what I will say is I think once we do, those of you who want to participate in an intergovernmental discussion and sit around the table to kind of brainstorm how we approach this from a community perspective, I think one of the things that we will need to have a discussion around is making sure that legislators understand the importance of this issue and how they may be able to assist in addressing the needs of our community in that area. So thank you.
Thank you again. Thank you. Agenda item number G4 is a resolution approving a citywide wireless master plan.
Mayor, City Council, as you know, this is actually, there's three items. There's this and the next two ordinances. The ordinances have to be read before you take action, but the presentation will cover all three. This has been quite a little project. Last year, City Council made it a priority to try to improve our cell service. You really saw that when we had hurricanes and the impact that not being able to be connected wirelessly and the negative impact it has on the whole community. So we've taken, a very innovative, proactive approach and actually try to go out and recruit the big carriers to bring more antennas and actually work with our partner, Diamond Communication, on doing exactly that. There's really three steps in this process. One of them is developing a master plan, which identifies the need and then what the solution is. The next is changing our ordinances. Our ordinances are way out of date and need to be updated. And then the third one, which was kind of a side issue that the state legislature created for us last year, is an ordinance addressing wireless facilities in public right-of-way, where the state legislature says we have to allow them within our street right-of-ways, but we can have some regulations as to how that impacts us. So all three of those are on your agenda today and in the presentation. I'm going to, introduce Ida, and then she will introduce our guest, and they'll do a little tag team on the presentation. So Ida, please take it from here.
So we worked in partnership with Diamond Communications, and the first portion of this presentation is the wireless master plan. And Randy, Don, and Tom will present.
Thanks, Ida. So I'm Dan Turnpaugh. I'm Vice President of Site Management for Diamond Communications. I have with me today Tom Murphy, who is our analyst, who really was the point person on doing a lot of the analysis behind the master plan and actually, drafting it, writing it. So it's good to bring him. And Randy Kilgore, to my immediate left, is our Southeast representative out to the carriers. So he's responsible for recruiting carriers into the community. So I'll talk a little bit about, kind of the goals and objectives for the master plan. Then I'll turn it over to Tom to talk about how we developed the master plan. And then finally, Randy will talk a little bit about, kind of the way forward and the marketing plan to bring the carriers in once this is all enacted. So as Mr. Landon mentioned, we were brought in really officially in May of last year. And we immediately went to work looking at the wireless infrastructure situation in Palm Coast. And we immediately saw there were some areas for improvement. And really, we we really analyzed all of the existing infrastructure that's here, and we noted that, you know, there's some lacking areas and some lacking places that we thought infrastructure could be improved. So our number one goal was to improve the wireless service and create the infrastructure needed for the carriers to really provide more enhanced services here in Palm Coast. Secondly, you know, we wanted to look at this more strategically and not really tactically. So, you know, we really worked pretty closely with, when Tom particularly and Randy worked particularly closely with city staff to make sure that we had selected some pre-approved or pre-selected locations, potential locations for new sites. And we really looked at that kind of holistically and in keeping with the development plans for the city. And then finally, if there, you know, we would like to try to generate revenue for the city by renting out some of the city property to host some of these new locations. So those are really our goals and objectives here. The overall wireless industry, what we've seen over the last, well, really since the advent of the iPhone about 10 years ago now, is really, really, really increased rapid demand growth for wireless services. There's a lot more applications, a lot more things being used for by along wireless phones, and the amount of data that's being pushed through these wireless networks is staggering. That 2016 number that's on there, that exabytes per month of 7 exabytes, and you kind of think, what's an exabyte and what's that mean? That number, 1 month of data that was being pushed through wireless networks in two years ago now, which is now less than half of what's being pushed through today, that 7 exabyte number really represents all of the data created by mankind up through the year 2000. So all of the pictures, all of the video, all of the data that's being pushed to Facebook and to Twitter and whatnot is now, that's how much is being pushed through wireless networks every month. And actually, we're already at more than two times that. And we're going to, 49 exabytes here by 2021. So in order to keep up with that, there's a lot of things that have happened for the wireless carriers. One of which being antennas being placed, radios being placed behind the antennas on the towers. So we'll talk about that, and that kind of creates an issue with regard to the ordinance. And just generally a need for more sites, of course, as well, is really the main thing. Also, we're a lot more dependent on our phones, I think. There's right around 50% of households in the United States don't have a wired phone. So this is everyone's lifeline. So it's important to have coverage. And I think on this next slide, some of the key concepts that we talked about as we worked to develop the plan. Coverage versus capacity and macro cell versus small cell. So macro cells are kind of your typical towers that you see out there that are, 100 to 150 feet tall, have an array of antennas of 6 or 9 or 12 antennas per carrier. And small cells are kind of the street furniture sites that you see now being developed in larger cities that have a lot of capacity, have capacity issues and already have coverage. And when we looked at Palm Coast, it's really sort of an area right now that coverage is really the main objective, and coverage is really the area of most opportunity, I think, for wireless development. Capacity, there are probably some areas in Palm Coast where there is coverage, but there's not enough capacity. And those might be areas along Palm Coast Parkway, for example, where small cells might have a role in the more near-term future. But for now, we really think that macro sites are needed to provide kind of that blanket of coverage that's still kind of lacking in a lot of areas of Palm Coast. I talked a little bit about concealed versus non-concealed and full array versus flush mount. So, the ordinance right now, as it stands, kind of mandates concealed sites that are, if they're above 100 feet, And that, I think that ordinance, and Ida will talk a lot more about this, but that ordinance went into effect, I think, in 2005 before the iPhone, for example. And it was also a 3G environment versus a 4G environment, which we're at today. So LTE, if you've heard of LTE, that's what 4G is. In the 3G environment, it was much easier to have concealed sites and have flagpole sites, for example. Again, those radios weren't sitting right behind the antenna, so just physically, there's not really a lot of space inside of a flagpole to accommodate that. And then you're also limited as to the number of antennas that you can really put in inside a flagpole unless you want it really, really, really big. So that's sort of another issue that we looked at in our wireless master plan and also in our comments with regard to the ordinance changes that are being proposed. And then tall versus short. So we thought about, you know, what would fit in the community best. And we also wanted to look at what the wireless carrier existing networks kind of are set up for and accommodate for additional sites, for new sites. We don't want to interfere with those existing locations. And so we kind of settled on a about 150-foot location for the tallest existing tallest new sites that we're proposing. A lot of areas and a lot of new coverage areas are, you know, might be taller in other cities, but we think that we can accommodate what the carriers need by building kind of right about 150-foot towers and accommodate all four carriers on those new sites. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tom to talk a little bit about how we actually developed the plan and what the implications are of that.
Hi, everyone. So again, we performed an analysis to identify how we could achieve the objectives we laid out at the beginning, improving wireless service while being mindful of the community surroundings and making sure that we don't engage in a massive proliferation of infrastructure around the city. We wanted to be as strategic as possible and put new infrastructure in locations where they could cover the largest area while fitting in, while meshing, I guess, with the carrier networks. So the first step that we took was figuring out where each carrier in Palm Coast was installed and the potential coverage area of that installment. So you'll see on this picture on the left, what that generating this model here involved was collecting a lot of information, significant help from city staff on from leases to building permits to other public FAA and FCC information and done site visits to figure out a couple key factors in carrier coverage for producing a model. Those are frequency, height, power in use, and the type of penetration you can expect from the site itself. So first thing we did is we took each of the four major carriers. We put all that information into our modeling software and generated a map that indicated areas of the city that probably were in need of improved coverage. The next thing, again, our objective is not to create a massive proliferation, but to utilize, where possible, existing city infrastructure to mitigate these gaps and improve service. So we looked at towers within the city, both owned by Palm Coast and third-party tower companies, either on Palm Coast property or even private property, as solutions to mitigate each carrier's coverage gap. So that's the light blue circles you see here. This is solving their coverage issues without additional infrastructure. Of course, there still remains some significant gaps, so we identified areas after this that required better service, and then overlaid city and publicly owned properties in and around Palm Coast that would be suitable to host new additional wireless infrastructure. So we identified 10 areas that need improvement, and we're able to find about 10 solutions with a couple backup properties should those not suffice. Again, we looked for Palm Coast owned properties, and then came up with a list of about 80 sites that would help mitigate these coverage gaps. And working with the city, we provided those sites, and they really combed through them at a very detailed level, and looking at setbacks from houses, the size of the parcel, whether it was on a floodplain, potential visual impact on the surrounding community, and what the property was either intended to be used for or its current use. So the picture on the right is an example of a property that we had initially proposed as a solution, and the city staff determined it was too close to the homes, and we pushed off to a larger property which was equally viable from a development standpoint, but also met the city's standards for ensuring the development is in the best interest of the community. Ultimately, we ended up with 29 properties, 25 of which were city-owned, and another 4 were either county-owned or owned by the flag of schools. We pretty much got properties in and around all the major areas we thought necessary to cover initially, so we're very pleased with what all the work between ourselves and city staff was able to come out with. And those properties and our proposed requirements in the ordinance kind of a product of that that'll hopefully enable us to solve Palm Coast's wireless issues in fashion. Thank you very much.
Hi there. So obviously the city has a real interest in improving coverage. As Dan discussed, the primary focus of the wireless master plan is to deal with some of the areas of the city that are not properly covered. So with the wireless carrier environment right now, there's pretty intense competition for the available capital that the carriers have. There's all sorts of initiatives related to kind of how the industry and technology is changing. So there's competition for small cells, capacity type improvements. There's fiber networks. A lot of the carriers are running dark fiber networks out to their sites. There's Internet of Things applications that the carriers are focusing on. FirstNet, which AT&T is working with the federal government on to provide a dedicated first responder network. So that's currently underway. All the states have opted into that program. So there's a lot of competition for the capital. Palm Coast is maybe a little bit behind some of the other communities related to coverage. So, you know, we want to, and the plan is, assuming the ordinance passes the wireless master plan, if it's approved, the plan is to approach the carriers and really show that Palm Coast is serious about improving coverage, and we want to set Palm Coast apart from other jurisdictions and show that willingness to improve service, potentially add new infrastructure on city properties with a sort of a fast-tracked approval process to get more sites in the city to help the residents, businesses, and visitors to, you know, have a better experience.
Council members, any questions? I have one. So you said this gives us a better advantage as far as demonstrating to the carriers that we're willing to do business. So carriers are going to come here because, A, they know that the need and demand is here to support the expansion of cell phone coverage here.
historically, have you engaged with the carriers to determine if that's been a challenge for them? Where did this conversation stem from of Palm Coast being behind as far as the coverage? And are there barriers? Obviously, this takes care of the barriers and addresses the barriers that you feel have slowed the process down a bit when it comes to those relationships. But so you feel very confident sitting here today that this strategy and approach will have them lining up, or what's your assessment?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, lining up may be a bit of a strong word, but no, the carriers, you know, from the discussions, you know, I've been in contact with the carriers. I've informed them that we were working with the city. Of course, we completed the contract last year. So there is interest in knowing more about the details that would come out of the wireless master plan and the ordinance changes. So to the extent to or how quickly a carrier may respond by indicating interest on a certain property, well, you know, that remains to be seen.
And, Jim, I know that we have a government affairs director with us today from AT&T. Have we reached out to the other carriers for them to vet this?
Just through Randy and his conversations with them letting them know that we are in this process. We've also, T-Mobile's been in town. I know we've talked to them because they have just recently added antenna and talking about another one possibly. But if I could add to that, you know, the word we get is that it's difficult to expand service here in Palm Coast because of our ordinance, because of perception. Yeah, who knows exactly? But the word we get from the carriers is it's difficult to put up antennas in Palm Coast. And as soon as you get that reputation, then they go elsewhere where it's easier because every community out there would like more antennas and need more coverage. So I think what we're trying to do here is make it easy, but also with the marketing and keep it in touch with them, trying to change that image and let them know that, yes, we're ready for them to, or we'll build towers. They don't build towers. They put antennas on towers. We'll build towers where they need to be, or we have towers that they can add to. So.
And are we looking at also future developments and projects and creating coverage in those areas that are, I mean, they're not developed at all?
This master plan, like any other, you know, is probably, I'd say, 5 years out. So, yes, as far as things that, like in the next 5 years, if you're talking about like west of US 1, really it's all a big blank canvas at this time. You know, as we develop city properties and potential sites, then that would be the time to look at it. But there is no way of determining where a good site is out on just, you know, thousands of acres of tree land. So this is not going to be a stagnant process. You have to stay flexible. That's why we have so many sites we're proposing, is that we want to be able to be flexible enough with the carriers, because they're the ones ultimately make that decision. And we can provide them with data, and Diamond has done their research, but they're still going to do their due diligence too. And so I think that having some flexibility is important. I think we've done that. So in the future, we're going to have to continue to evaluate new sites as we continue to grow.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes. I'm curious about the terms of lease agreements that we're going to be going forward with as we approach the different carriers. I know today our lease agreements are somewhere around $30,000 per year per carrier for the city-owned antennas. And I know that adjustments were going to be made to that as part of the wireless master plan, but I didn't see any proposals for monetary amounts going forward. And part two of the question is, how aggressively are we going to market our existing infrastructure, giving financial incentives or however creative we want to be, to try to expedite the process of getting carriers onto our existing infrastructure? Because if we're going to be building new poles, we're still looking about a year before any implementation actually occurs. Could you shed some light on that?
The existing sites and towers, they have been marketed to the carriers. I know that some carriers are probably more present than others at this point. But again, there's a lot of things that go into what dictates a carrier going on a specific property. So there are currently a lot of flagpoles in Palm Coast. You know, with the tower-mounted radios that Dan mentioned earlier, the attractiveness of flagpoles, especially the older, smaller ones, generally the carriers just don't get the bang for the for their buck on sites like that. So Ida can talk about what's planned. But again, yes, the existing sites are being marketed.
But if this whole process is approved, we will actually offer up to them being able to put their antennas outside those flagpoles, you know, based on conversation at the workshop, with the idea that hopefully if the structural can handle it, and that's a big, you know, you got the engineering side of it. And there's other sites out there, and some of them aren't city-owned. But, yeah, we will continue to market. You know, we have a new one recently on county property there at on Colbert Lane that I believe has one antenna that hasn't been activated or was recently
activated.
It was recently.
For Verizon.
Yeah, it's got a couple, two or three more opportunities. We'll continue to market those, too, not just our sites, but every tower out there. Recently, the one here right next door, FPC, T-Mobile went on that. So anytime we can get antennas on existing sites, that's better than building a new pole. So that's going to be very much part of it. As far as your question on lease terms, that is, you know, kind of the next step as far as how much the carriers, what the market will bear at this point. Diamond will be very much part of that those negotiations. Our agreement with Diamond is that this whole process, we pay nothing up front, and that it is a they receive a portion of the, they have to, if it's a tower, they build a tower and they receive more. But the total cost of that infrastructure is Diamond's. And then we have a lease on our property. If it's an existing, we receive, I believe it was 60%. And if it's a new tower, it's 40%. I'm not sure if those numbers are exactly correct. Exactly what the market is, Mr. Clufus, be honest with you, I've suggested to him, you know, first 3 years could be free as far as we're concerned, trying to just provide that incentive. And then after that, we would go market rate. I don't know if that's practical or if that's what Diamond's thinking exactly, but those are the kind of things that right now we're just interested in trying to encourage them to come.
That's encouraging. That's absolutely what I was going to suggest. Even if we have to somehow supplement that, those critical infrastructure improvements are going to be a little far out if we're building towers, but to get it more quickly, I wasn't sure how the rest of the council felt about being as creative as possible with the terms for adding equipment to our existing structures.
Yep. I think that incentive versus a new tower makes a lot of sense, and that's what we've been talking about. We'll promote.
Any other questions, council members? Now we'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wishes to speak on agenda item number G4, please do so at this time.
Morning again, George Mayo, Palm Coast. I think this is kind of one of those things where people are going to have to realize they're always complaining, I don't have service, I can't find service. I know when my wife and I drive around the city from one place to another, I'm driving and she's trying to call, I don't have service, or I have one bar or dropped call. I can understand that when I live back in Connecticut. Oh, we're down in the valley. When we get to the top of the mountain, we'll get service. Basically, we're flat here. And to have such poor service, it just kind of amazes me. I don't know. I'm not a tech guy, but it still wonder how could we have such poor service here. One of the illustrations that the gentleman showed was they found a site and then the city deemed it was too close to houses. Well, I think what the city's going to have to realize, come to a certain point in some places, it's going to be, do you want better service and maybe have to look at a pole in the distance, or, okay, we're not going to put a pole here and you're not going to have such great service. I'm not saying change the ordinances, but it seems like that's in some sections, areas, that may come down to that. I live near the airport. They're probably not going to be in the Z section, put up a tall pole because of the planes. I would be willing to look at some kind of pole with better service. In my house, I get one bar. And it's like, okay, we have to use Wi-Fi, you know, in order to use the cell phones almost. So it's just almost like a case of NIMBY. you know, not in my backyard. I want better service. They're going to complain to you, but not in my backyard. Put it somewhere else where I can't see it. So that's a decision that's going to have to be made. One of the questions for the gentleman was, as he said, we went from 3G to 4G. Recently, I've been reading that the major carriers, Verizon, possibly they're talking about in the near future going to 5G. Will this equipment, not knowing anything, understanding enough about it, handle 5G? Or if 5G comes in, do they now come and say, well, we have to do something different. We have to add equipment to what we already did, and it's going to cost X amount of dollars more? Or will this be compatible with the 5G? Thank you.
Comments. Next speaker.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. In my house, I have a signal booster from my cell phone. And I don't know what technology is doing as far as these towers and everything are going. I was just wondering if scientists progressing in boosting their signal capabilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Capehart, resident of Palm Coast. I feel like the relationship that we're getting into with Diamond Communications is unnecessary because we have dedicated account representatives from each of the carriers, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, that can work directly with our government. Their whole purpose is to work with city municipalities, government agencies at the city and county level. So I just feel like we're getting into a long-term relationship here that isn't necessary, that we are going to end up paying, you know, 20% or whatever it is to Diamond Communications for a long-term plan, 5 years. In 5 years, the technology is going to be completely different. So from my point of view, working directly with the carriers is a much better solution.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. You know, that theory about working with the carriers may or may not be true. You just heard where they said they don't put up the towers. They will put stuff on the towers if it's in their interest. Well, the same thing with working with the city. They may or may not want to work with the city, and if they do work with the city, their hands will be deeper in our pockets than Diamond ever would be. So I think we need somebody, and we need somebody that knows exactly how the system works and project outward years ahead of things to put in and everything, the where it is, what's the best place to put it, because the companies, the big companies, want it over here, or they want it over there, or they want it over there, and it may not be best for all of us citizens. I live in Pine Grove, and right now I don't have any bars. I have a line, and I have to walk from one room to the other to get anything really, really substantial. So I can tell you right now, trust but verify. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Close public comment. I don't know if they want to answer the 5G question or you want to answer the 5G question.
I'm going to let the experts answer the 5G question.
So, yeah, part of what this plan, the Wireless Master Plan, is designed to do is really get the city ready for, and the wireless networks in the city, ready for 5G. And to go from 3 to 5 is sort of unsustainable. Now, 5G, the exact architecture for the what those networks are going to look like is a little bit of an open question, and it may be different for each of the carriers. But what we do know is it's going to rely a little bit more on small cells, certainly than 3G did, a lot more than 3G did, and probably more than 4G does. So really, these towers are really going to not only bridge the gap between 3G and 5G, but there is going to be, with those small cells, there'll be some interplay between the small cells that are set up for 5G and the towers that we're planning to build to provide coverage for 4G. So, yeah, they're going to work together, and they're really necessary to get ready for 5G. But, yeah, the gentleman's right. There are a couple of the carriers that are working on 5G and trying to roll that out, even in trials, even this year. So there's no handsets for 5G, and it's still a ways off before you're going to have 5G handsets. But we definitely need to get ready and make sure that the coverage is there in the 4G environment so that we can be ready for 5G.
And as far as Mr. Carr's comments about a booster, is this an agenda?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's inside buildings is always an issue, and there's different ways of addressing that. One of them is a booster. In today's world, Wi-Fi calling is also a solution for that. But the ultimate goal is to add the coverage and the capacity, so you don't need either one of those. And so that's what we're trying to work on, is more of the big picture. In the meantime, people are going to have to address their own individual needs, depending on how much strength they have in a signal in their own homes.
And to Ms. Capehart's question or comment about working directly with the government, can you talk a little bit about your approach and how this came about?
Well, first of all, that decision has already been made. We have a contract with Diamond Communications, and that was a lengthy discussion last year. But I will tell you that at that time, it took a long time before we negotiated. It was an issue that was something we looked at very hard. Since developing the relationship with Diamond, I am more and more convinced that this really has to be a three-legged stool, and that it really takes the cooperation of the carriers to ultimately put up the antennas, and it takes the city. But we also, just like you need an engineer to design a street, you got to have those experts to help us with FDOT, because you have to have the technical people to work with the carriers. Yes, we have representatives, but the representatives from AT&T that's in the room, she'll tell you that she doesn't have the technical background. So it's a different relationship in working with our connections here with public relations, if you will, with the carriers versus the technical people. And so we have people that can talk their lingo, can provide the data, and I think that is critical. It's one of the reasons why we got stagnant. You know, we had a relationship with a company a few years ago, and that's when we started seeing a lot of growth. That relationship expired, and then we started getting stagnant because we really didn't have that third leg of the stool. So, and I have now that we've started working with Diamond, more and more convinced that it's critical. They have connections we don't with the technical people. Yes, we can provide connections with more of the government affairs and public relations, but we need the technical side too.
And thank you for your comments, Lewis, as always. All right, Council, I will take it back to us, and I will entertain a motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number G5 is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Madam Mayor. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, repealing Chapter 54, Wireless Telecommunications of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Palm Coast. This ordinance amends the Unified Land Development Code of the City of Palm Coast, also by amending Chapter 3, Zoning, Uses, and Dimensional Standards, Section 3.0201, Residential Zoning Districts, Table 3.2, to cross-reference Section 4.20 relating to wireless communication facilities, and amending Section 3.03.02, Non-Residential and Mixed-Use Districts, allowable uses, Table 3.4, to cross-reference Section 4.20 relating to wireless communication facilities, repealing and replacing Section 4.20, Wireless Communication Facilities, of Chapter 4 conditions for limited specific uses and activities, to amend and update regulations regarding communications facilities consistent with applicable state and federal law, and to rename Section 4.20 to read Wireless Telecommunications, amending Section 14.02 Glossary to update definitions relating to wireless communication facilities, providing for severability, codification for conflicts, and providing for an effective date. That should be straightforward enough.
Easy for you.
Mayor, this is part two of the same presentation, really. Master plan doesn't really do us any good if we don't have the tools to implement the program, and the ordinance actually is part of the implementation. So Ida is going to make that presentation for us. Take it from here, Ida.
So this is the proposed wireless communication facilities ordinance. It's intended to support the wireless master plan and also update our ordinance overall. Currently, we have two wireless communication facility ordinances on the books. One is in Chapter 54 of the Code of Ordinances, and the other is in Chapter 4 of the Land Development Code. Both these ordinances were approved in 2005, and as was mentioned earlier, technology has changed so much since then. YouTube was just founded, MCI disappeared, no Facebook or Twitter or iPhone or apps as we know them today. Palm Coast had just 52,000 people. Tablets had not yet become mainstream. The Kindle was not launched, and the iPad occurred in 2010. But there are other reasons to update the ordinance besides the dramatic increase in data and technology changes. Reliance on landlines is now below 50% in this country. And if you look at it by age group, you'll see that among younger households, the percentage that is wireless is almost 70%. So the future is definitely in the wireless direction. We also know that there's a demonstrated public safety need after everybody has experienced two hurricanes, one each for the last 2 years, and the amount of concern people have during those events. There's a desire to improve cell service for all carriers. It's if you have the carrier that's working versus somebody that doesn't have a carrier that's working, that's kind of an inconsistent level of service. We know that wireless is important for the business community and our economic base. There's a review from TripAdvisor about someone that had a stay in Palm Coast, and they say good stay but bad cell phone reception. So our service can be improved and help the business community in that regard. And more wireless infrastructure promotes resiliency of the system overall. The ordinance has at least five key provisions. It supports an inventory of preferred city and public sites. It establishes administrative approval for wireless master plan sites. Other sites may apply as a special exception. It establishes a maximum of 150 feet in height for a tower. It includes a 150-foot setback from residentially zoned or platted property. It establishes the monopole as a preferred standard. And the last item is perhaps the thorniest in terms of challenging is the antenna array visibility issue. In terms of supporting an inventory of preferred sites, it adds an additional opportunity for wireless master plan sites. City-owned property in the wireless master plan would be the highest priority. Other public property identified in the wireless master plan would be the second priority. Other city or public-owned property not identified in the wireless master plan would be third, and privately owned property not identified in the wireless master plan would be fourth. This is just a preference. It establishes administrative approval of wireless master plan sites. Other sites may apply as a special exception. Administrative approval streamlines and incentivizes wireless master plan sites. However, the proposed ordinance also expands the options available beyond that of the current ordinance for non-wireless master plan sites. It creates a consistent height standard for both options. Wireless master plan sites will be further guided by lease provisions. Special exception sites may have conditions applied to them as part of the special exception process in the Land Development Code. It establishes a maximum of 150 feet in height. This is above the tree line to facilitate transmissions. It allows for four carriers to locate on a tower, with the lowest co-location being at 120 feet, again above the tree line. Whereas if you look at the graphic, a lower co-location at 60 or 70 feet has reduced coverage almost by half. Promotes the efficient use of infrastructure, and 150 feet was used as a basis for the wireless master plan analysis. Fourthly, the proposed draft ordinance includes a 150-foot setback from residentially zoned or platted property. This was a standard set forth in the Palm Coast overlay. Wireless master plan sites do not include any residentially zoned properties. The proposed draft ordinance establishes an extra justification requirement for towers proposed in residential within the confines of law. 150-foot height setback requirement is an added safety component, and we believe that the wireless master plan allows for an inventory of suitable sites in lieu of residential candidate sites. The proposed draft ordinance also establishes the monopole as the preferred standard. Monopoles are recommended in the wireless master plan. Lattice and guide towers are prohibited. Those are the sort of Eiffel Tower looking towers, or the towers that have extending cables. Monopoles have a smaller footprint and are more compact. In terms of antenna array visibility, the draft, and this, there was some discussion of this at the work session, the draft provides language on this. However, we've been discussing this issue, and I think the discussion is ongoing. The draft ordinance says it may be full array, flush-mounted, or concealed. However, what we've learned is that today's technology increasingly demands full array to meet coverage needs. So to better flush out this issue, we provided some photos. The photos on the left show what's referred to as a flush-mounted antenna. Those are the more compressed arrays. I think it's important to note that it's still visible, right? It's flush-mounted, but it's still visible. And what we learned is that it reduces the functionality of those antennas. If you look at the antennas on the right, those are referred to as full array, and they have the triangular shape to them, which maximizes the number of antenna heads they can have, and that is what increases coverage. So currently our ordinance requires flush-mounted, and we're talking about full array increasingly more in this conversation. This is another sort of comparison of full array antenna options. This is a diamond tower in St. Augustine. It's full array. You can see the monopole, but again, it has more of an extension on top of the tower. And to the right is a concealment technique that you will see for full array antennas. It's called the monopine. And the way I describe it is it's using the faux pine leaves to disguise the full array. However, you can see that it's well above the tree line, and is not really probably concealed fully in terms of people not knowing that it's a tower. So again, just to provide you with some examples of the antenna array visibility issue, to the left, we have the flagpole, which was discussed. And, you know, the flagpole limits the ability, the design of the flagpole limits the ability for that tower to be expanded, generally speaking. The second from the left is the flush-mounted antenna located at Flagler Palm Coast High School with a shroud around it. So that's a concealment technique for the flush-mounted. And clearly, that's a very visible tower. The third photo from the left is the full array, which we've discussed. And, of course, the fourth photo is a full array disguised as a monopine. So it kind of gives you a little bit of a spectrum of concealment techniques. So in terms of comparing our existing ordinance with the proposed ordinance, our existing ordinance predates our 2008 land development code. So it doesn't match, it's out of sync. It's located in two locations. It's overlapping and conflicting in terms of today's usage. It's very prescriptive in parts. It's out of date, and it doesn't provide incentives. Our proposed ordinance is consolidated into one section, our land development code. It establishes two clear pathways for a tower, one of which is being a wireless master plan candidate, and the other to apply as a special exception. Incorporates the new legislative requirements, and that's important because we have mandatory review times as part of legislative and state and legislative requirements. It updates the definitions and incentivizes developments of new towers located on wireless master plan sites. And lastly, it's more flexible. I think we can say that. So that concludes my comments on the proposed land development code piece of the wireless master plan.
Council, any questions or comments?
I have one, yes. But Bob, do you have anything?
No. So my question, also again, a two-parter. One, did we look at the possibility of a dig-once ordinance? Because cell phone towers in the hole without any type of connectivity via fiber, they're still, like you said, a tool, but they're not connected to anything else, so they're no good. If we were to build these towers, they still wouldn't be capable of putting communication devices on them without an active connection. And it's also important for fiber to be laid for the 5G infrastructure that's going to be placed into our community because it requires many more frequent small distributed antennas. But the Dig Once ordinance was something that I had brought up in our five-year strategic planning, and I don't know if there were any opportunities to look at that because we can do all we want for marketing and working with our government affairs director, which you kind of took a jab at there. The government affairs director, she translates the engineer talk to government talk. So she didn't have a chance to defend herself, but being in technology, I kind of took a little offense to that. But the fiber that is so critical to this infrastructure actually existing, if we'd have an opportunity to enforce a dig once policy like many communities are doing, that would be something that may put us in a better position to provide a soup to nuts solution for these carriers to come into place. Did we look at that?
What kind of ordinance against
it? A dig-once ordinance. So if we're doing any type of road construction where we don't have conduit or there is conduit that is put in place so that fiber can be pulled through?
Yes.
So you don't have to dig up again.
Have we looked at that ordinance? No, but it's a good idea. In fact, that you're talking about burying underground in our right-of-way. That would be different from this, but you're 100% correct. What you're seeing out there right now, for example, is a company that's putting fiber in because of, and actually they're working to connect all the Verizons. That's going to be a separate project, and I think it's worthwhile. We've talked about that, yes. And if I may say, maybe she wants to get up and defend herself. But I started talking technical with her, and she told me, I'm not your person, and that we need to get the right people here. So I actually was feeding off of what she said, just so you know. I wasn't trying to insult her.
Technical?
I wasn't trying to insult her whatsoever, but just state that it's just like with us. We need technical people, and we need the administrative side of it. And they're the same way.
So as far as the dig once, are you saying this doesn't address?
This doesn't address that at all. That has to do with if you're going to dig, you have to, usually it means you have to provide conduit for a city to be able to provide, extend our fiber, if you will.
Not do that, comprehensive.
It's they competing with it. It really is a different program. We need to look into it.
Like the fuel tank, you can't have a car without a fuel tank. It's kind of, I know they're analogous, but they're somewhat related.
Well, I mean, I think, though, you know, sort of like the force main going up to Marineland, you offer a comprehensive approach through an ordinance that requires them at the time of construction to lay a connection so when we're ready to tie in or break, you know, drive our force main up to Marineland, it has that connectivity already. It's almost like getting off of septic, which is a great idea over the Barrier Island. But I do think the approach of sort of, we are looking at this as more of a comprehensive approach than we have in the past. And I think it's worthwhile bringing back that language that would allow us to do that.
And Mr. Viscardi back there is reminding me that we're actually going to bring to you a proposal from a company that will be looking at that. That was part of our whole fiber master plan update. So we're heading in that direction. It's just not part of this, but it is something that we need to look at. In fact, we'll bring a proposal that will be included in that probably this month or next month.
But if we're looking at our sites and to Councilmember Klupsa's point, the fiber is a part of that connection. I mean,
absolutely,
it is.
Yes.
So if it's our sites and it gives us a greater advantage to ensure that these carriers are coming on board and we're allowing that, why would we not even include that? I mean, it doesn't take away anything from the ordinance.
From this ordinance, no. No, but it's, once again, if you have a, when we do a street project, we lay the conduit, okay? That just makes sense. What we're talking about is when a company comes in to get a permit to dig in our right-of-way, we are going to tell them they also have to install conduit for us. And so that is a separate issue. You're basically telling a private company that they're going to provide us with this asset. Once again, I'm not saying it's a bad idea, but that is a separate conversation.
We lay the conduit as a city.
Well, that's the whole idea of one dig. Sure, we can lay the conduit, but that would be a separate dig than their dig. They're laying their conduit right now. It would be a matter of giving us some conduit.
Coordinate with them if they're doing it and say, we will lay the conduit at the time that you are constructing. Why would we? So we're coordinating our efforts.
Right.
Dig once, not
right.
Dig twice.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, once again, more complicated than that. Because we're dealing with it right now. But that's a separate conversation. You have to have different people in the room to have that conversation with you.
One other interesting thing about the fiber that's being laid now through the city, I know we had talked about it a little bit, having in our ordinance some type of verbiage to force co-location through the conduit so that we can also lay our fiber through the same conduit, approve permits for pulling their fiber as long as we can also pull our fiber through their conduit that they lay. We had talked about that. I'm not sure.
Right. And once again, that is coming your way.
But it's just dangerous because they're laying fiber right now. If you see it going all the way down 100, so once it's down, very little incentive for them to try to.
Once again, if we had the ordinance in place, what you're seeing is on state right of way. And the state right of way, they don't have to get a city permit for the state right of way. So then that's going to be we could not require them to lay the fiber for us.
So let's stop it before it gets to the city right of way.
Yep. It's once again, it sounds simple, but it's more complicated than one would think. And it is, I mean, we're going to have more fiber in this community. And so having a master plan and a master comprehensive approach to that is important. And we'll be bringing something to you very shortly to start that process.
I think why it is connected is, you know, I mean, more and more people are using their mobile devices rather than even their desktops. I mean, desktops are not utilized at all as they were a few years ago. And I think it's going to be a continual trend moving forward. I know in my company that I work for, we market through a tool called HubSpot, and it allows us that every email that we send out to determine how many of those potential readers opened it, and then what they opened it with. So there's even a picture, so it allows us to take our marketing strategies and cater it to a mobile device, because we know that it's going to be viewed in a matter of seconds, and then they're going to either close it or not. So I do think the conversation is really critical when it comes to not only cell phone service, which we have to provide for our residents for safety measures, but also the technology that goes along with these devices, with the capabilities of Wi-Fi, high-speed internet, those kind of things. More and more, they're going to be utilized through these devices.
Absolutely, and the talking is not the issue. It's all the data being pushed through the wires and the air that's really the issue as far as capacity goes. And
any questions? Other than
that? I'm still trying to understand the dig once ordinance. What we're doing here now, is that going to make it that we're duplicating it? We're doing something twice, so it's just going to cost us twice as much?
No, I brought the dig once ordinance into play only because for a carrier to be able to get their equipment onto a tower, they need to have fiber laid. And if there's an opportunity where we have already been digging to one of our prospective sites that they've identified, if we can get the infrastructure in place for them to be able to say, okay, it's going to cost us less to actually install equipment on this tower because we don't have to backhaul our own fiber because the conduit's already there. We just have to pull through the existing conduit. It may, and I'm unsure because I'm not in the industry, but fiscally it would be more of an incentive for them to say, okay, it's going to cost me X dollars less to put a tower here with our equipment on it because that infrastructure has already been established to it. But it's just a good thing to have if you're looking to provide a full solution to say, okay, all you really have to do is put your equipment on this tower that Diamond's willing to build for us and your fiber already has connectivity. You should be good to go because backhauling fiber is not the easiest thing in the world, but it just takes time.
What we find is that the big carriers want their own fiber, and they lots of times don't even want to use it. They have a contract with somebody that, because if it gets cut, if it's not maintained, then they have one. So, but key to it is that every tower has to be connected with a wire, if you will. In this case, it's going to be glass, which is a fiber. So it's not just a wireless. It also has the fiber that's running all over the country to connect all these together, too. So that's why it's important to have an update to our whole fiber network in this community. And it's nice to see that we have people in town laying fiber because that will help. So it's not just the towers. Mr. Klufus is making an excellent point. That's why it all has to get tied together. This is we're dealing with the towers. You're going to see something very soon where we're going to deal with the next step of it.
And it may be anti-competitive for us to be laying our own fiber, but the conduit is the important part because that's the hollow tube that we lay underneath the ground, and that's the most expensive part. So even if we're not laying our own fiber, as long as we provide that tunnel for them to pull their own fiber, that's the most expensive part and time-consuming for them. So.
Okay, I will open up to public comment. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number G5, please do so at this time.
If the question is whether to have flush mount or full array, if you're putting up these towers, it seems like the only perfect solution is to allow full array. Otherwise, it seems like you're tying your hand behind your back trying to do something. And I wonder if you do allow that, as the lady showed the picture of the antenna at Palm Coast High School, would you allow it to be retrofitted from the flush mount that it now is to the full array? So this way, you would, according to them, expand the coverage without having to put up a new pole. And if there aren't existing poles out there right now, and I'm sure there are, that are flush mount, retrofit those also, which automatically sounds like you would increase the coverage without having to put up an additional pole. If you're looking at a 150-foot pole, it's not really that much different looking at the flush mount as a full array. And if it increases that coverage that much, as she said, it seems to be a no-brainer and a well worth something to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi. So I know it seems like I have a lot to say here and that I should know a lot, but I really just have friends that are in the industry. Mr. Clufish, you said, you know, you weren't in the industry, so you didn't know quite as much. But what I'm hearing is we're talking about building towers. And from conversation I overhear with friends and family, that towers are really a thing of the past, that the carriers have options to put some type of device, I don't know what it's called, a booster or a small cell or what, on existing light poles, flag poles, electricity poles. So I would like someone, if they can, to clarify that opportunity and compare it to building new towers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. We decided as a council last time that we preferred the full array, that was the direction we wanted to go in. And as far as the retrofitting, the school district one is not.
Yeah, we had no jurisdiction over that, and we're not involved in that one at all. I'm not sure what the conversation was. It is what it is at this point. But, yes, in fact, we're still working on tweaking the ordinance, and you may see a few minor changes between first read and second read to make it very clear that City Council is saying full array is okay. George is correct in the fact that better coverage means with one tower means fewer towers, so there's that benefit also. But yes, we're moving forward with the full array and make sure the ordinance
there's
makes
the
that very clear.
There's the ability to retrofit any.
And if absolutely, if we allow full array, then the retrofit will be allowed too.
And as far as Ms. Capehart's comments, it was my understanding that the carriers do not prefer flagpoles due to the fact that it doesn't provide the coverage that.
Well, I think she's really talking about the next ordinance. So let me try to. This is one of the things I learned in this whole process, and it was actually in the master plan they talked about a little bit more of having the coverage versus the capacity. And the towers with the larger cells provide the coverage. The problem is that you still have to have the capacity, and the capacity comes when you have a lot of people who end up in one location, a sporting event. You know, a good example here was during the hurricanes. People said, well, my coverage was poor. One of the reasons is because we had I-95 at a standstill with, guess what they're all out there doing? They're on their phones playing video games, et cetera. So the capacity started going down because we had more people using it. So the capacity, what the industry is headed towards are the small cells. That is the future. And that is where they put smaller cells on existing light poles. They maybe will put it on a mast arm of a traffic signal. And the next ordinance we're going to talk about is going to allow those also. So it's really a combination of needing the coverage so you don't have a gap, because the small cells don't work well unless you actually have that good coverage. And so we need both. And that's why we're having another ordinance next to allow the small cells too. Right. And then Mr. Clufus's point is you have to also have the fiber that's all tied into it. So there are a number of things that go along with this. This is why it's been quite a little project. And it's not just putting up towers. It's coordinating all these together. So it's actually a good segue into the next ordinance.
Well, it also allows us to recognize state legislation that passed last year that requires us to let them exist
yes.
within a right-of-way.
Yep.
So it does a couple of things.
Yep.
It also creates that uniformity when we have different carriers that are coming in and may want different things, but it allows us to have that
right.
uniformity within our ordinances that reflects that.
But the point is that, you know, we're talking about the future, and those, we are doing that at this time, too. We're not just talking about the large towers.
And the towers being a thing of the past, I mean,
they still have to have the towers. What the future is all about is, at least in the foreseeable future, is trying to add capacity with the smaller cells.
5G is very reliant because the signal is so dense. The propagation distance between towers has to be much closer. So the small towers, yeah, for 5G it's necessary, absolutely.
We will blanket our community and allow for that.
But they, you know, in your large cities, they're not going to do away with the big towers. They're just going to augment them with the small cells.
The other thing that might be tough about retrofitting the existing monopoles is that the center line for the signals right now, those poles are 100 feet tall?
I don't think they're that tall, but I'm not sure.
But I learned that from our last meeting, that the center line for the signal propagation is important. So if they're not aligned correctly, so don't want to get your hopes up.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number G6, an ordinance amended. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor. You don't want to read it? You don't want to read the title? I'll let you do it.
Mayor, this is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast for amending Section 4238, exceptions of Section 2, right-of-way utilization of Chapter 42, streets, roads, bridges, and other public places, to provide an exception for wireless facilities permitted in accordance with the Communications Right-of-Way Ordinance. Amending Article 4, Communications Right-of-Way of Chapter 42, streets, roads, and bridges, and other public places of the Code of Ordinances of the City of Palm Coast, to amend and update the regulations regarding communications facilities in public rights-of-way consistent with the applicable state and federal law, including the Advanced Wireless Infrastructure Deployment Act, providing for severability, providing for codification, providing for conflicts, and for an effective date. Mayor, if I could give a little commentary. Within that quickly read title, this new state law that you're referring to is the Advanced Wireless Infrastructure Deployment Act, and that's in Chapter 337. And oversimplifying, the last ordinance that we read really dealt with towers and where the towers. This is more looking at what can the city do, what can the city do to protect its rights of way, and keeping in mind that we now have certain preemptions under federal and state law, but still trying to balance the expansion of the ability to of the overall goal, but also trying to understand that we need to make sure that our rights of way are safe. And keeping an aesthetic, and those types of objectives, which are recognized as permitted under federal and state law.
Yes, this is phase three of this whole program, and I think it's had a little introduction with the last ordinance, but it's and Mr. Reichman. So I won't add to that, but it's obviously a very important part of our future wireless technology. And Ida, if you'll take it from here.
So as was mentioned, the Advanced Wireless Deployment Act passed this past year. I think it took effect July 1st. As we all know, the public right-of-way is a valuable resource to be acquired and maintained for the long-term benefit of the community. This proposed ordinance provides a process for the placement of micro wireless facilities and small cells in the public right-of-way. The proposed ordinance protects the city's interests within the constraints of federal and state law. And really what this ordinance does is, should we get an application, we would be prepared for one of these facilities.
Questions or comments? Open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number G6, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number G7. Thank you for your presentation. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Madam Mayor, Council. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, providing for the amendment of the official zoning map as established in Section 2.06 of the City of Palm Coast Unified Land Development Code. It amends the official zoning map for 0.41 acres, more or less, of certain real property described as tax parcel ID number 71131-716-000-200010, located at 40 Colchester Lane, and be more particularly described in the attached Exhibit A to the ordinance. Rezoning from multifamily residential 1 MFR1 to single family residential 1 SFR1 zoning district, providing for conflicts, providing for severability, and for an effective date. Mayor, Council, this is a quasi judicial matter, so if there have been any ex parte communications prior to the reading of this and the consideration of this ordinance, those need to be disclosed at this time.
Any council member?
Nothing.
This particular rezoning is actually a partnership between us and the property owner, because this is the parcel that's left over from the Longs Creek Nature Preserve. In other words, we obtained most of the property except for this one lot. That property was all zoned multifamily at the time. It's one of the reasons why we obtain that property and develop the nature park. But this was the leftover parcel, and so we've been trying to work with the property owner as to what's the best match to fit with both the neighborhood but also with the park. And so this is a joint effort. So Ida, please go through the details.
So this is a proposed rezoning request. We refer to it as Application 3449 at 40 Colchester Lane. The owner is John Morris. The location is north of Palm Harbor Parkway, adjacent to the entrance of Longs Creek. There you can
pedestrian entrance to Long Creek.
There's a pedestrian easement at the entrance of Longs Creek. So you can see the nature preserve and the aerial behind the subject site. And you can see to the north that there's all residential properties. The existing future land use is residential. Again, you can see the preserve area behind the property we're speaking about. The current zoning is multifamily one. It's 0.41 acres in size, and it's vacant. The proposed zoning is single family one. Be more compatible with the residential uses to the north and adjacent to it. Just to compare the multifamily zoning with the single family one zoning that's being proposed, the biggest difference is with respect to density and the minimum living area that would be allowed for a unit on site. The multifamily one allows 650 square feet. The minimum living area for a single family residential unit would be 1,200 square feet. But in terms of building height, the multifamily one would allow up to 50 feet. And prior to agreeing to this rezoning, the applicant was considering townhomes and placing garages underneath the proposed structures. So they would have been very elevated in terms of the surrounding density and height in the vicinity of the tract. We believe that the proposed rezoning will enhance the compatibility of the single-family uses in the neighborhood, and it's consistent with the Land Development Code and the Comprehensive Plan, and above all, protects the the area from potential intrusive land uses. Infrastructure is nearby and available, and it's it's compatible with the residential future land use and the surrounding zoning. And it will be subject to any development on the site will be subject to further review with the Land Development Code, the Comprehensive Plan, and all the other city's codes and ordinances. So our recommendation, the recommendation of the Planning Board, is to find the request consistent with the Land Development Code and the Comprehensive Plan and approve the rezoning of 40 Colchester Lane from Multifamily 1 to Single Family Residential 1.
Council, any questions or comments? Now, open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make a comment on agenda item number G7, please do so at this time. And one, I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number G8, a resolution. Update to the third amended and restated Palm Coast Park Development of Regional Impact Development Order. Mr. Landon.
Mayor, City Council, you're seeing a number of these as we are seeing more and more interest in actually going vertical with new areas of town. This one is out on US 1. It is the DRI, Development Regional Impact, known as Palm Coast Park, which is a little misleading, but it's a multi-use type facility. And as they are starting to actually look at developing infrastructure and going vertical with structures, they're wanting to fine-tune some of the details that were approved over 10 years ago. So, Bill, I've stalled as long as I can stall. Bill's going to give you the details.
Good morning, council members. We got to look at this a few months ago. In the meantime, Palm Coast Park, DRI, and MPD, it's 4,677 acres, and it's along both sides of U.S. Highway 1. Extends all the way from Hargrove Grade all the way up and just north of Old Kings Road. And it's a mixed-use MPD and DRI. If you look at the bottom left portion of the screen, you can see the applicable area that is in for the minor DRI amendment. Essentially, we've got new property owners here, Sunbelt Palm Coast 1 LLC purchased Track 1, and Florida Land Investments 1 LLC purchased Tracks 2 and 3, and they've requested a change just to one exhibit of the DRI. And this exhibit B shows what we have right now. Now, in this case, the north arrow is sort of tracking to the left side of the screen. So Hargrove Grade is in the bottom right-hand corner. So you can see tracks 1 and 2 down there. The light tan areas are the permitted soil extraction areas. And this is what the updated Exhibit B would look like. They would like to move the soil extraction areas from tracks 1 and 2 over to track 3, and on the next slide, you'll see a blow-up of this. So existing is on the left, and you can see there's three light tan areas where the soil extraction areas would be allowed, and the it's now being proposed on the right-hand side of the screen to be in the hashed area there. And what that does is you can see the upland areas would be preserved. So what's happened when they started doing the wetland jurisdictional work with St. John's River Water Management District, they found out that the wetland areas were about 30 acres larger. So for them to do soil extraction, they would have to cut roads in here to get the equipment in. So by relocating it over to track 3, this would be minimized substantially. And staff's required to look at this, all proposed development orders with five review criteria. A, must not be in conflict with public interest. B, must be consistent with the Land Development Code and comprehensive plan. C, must not impose a significant liability or hardship on the city. D, must not create an unreasonable hazard or nuisance. And E, must comply with all applicable government standards. And planning staff reviewed the update for these and provided details in the staff report. The changes will not increase the DRI entitlements or create a nuisance, hazard, or any compatibility issues. The soil extraction areas are already permitted in the DRI on tracks 1 and 2. And it's just moving the entitlements over to track 3 to minimize wetland environmental impacts. And the changes will meet the Land Development Code and Comprehensive Plan. We did post 3 signs along US 1 adjacent to the tracks 1, 2, and 3. The applicant notified neighbors within 300 feet of the neighborhood information by US mail. And the neighborhood information meeting was held at the public library back in December 14th. However, no one from the public showed up. The planning staff and the planning board found the amendment in compliance with the Land Development Code, the comprehensive plan, and recommend that City Council approve the update to the third amended and restated Palm Coast Park DRI Development Order application number 3453. And the applicant's representative is here. If there's any question from him, that would be Clint Smith, who's representing them.
Mayor, if I could just add to that, just for audience who may not know, soil extraction area is a better way of saying digging a pond. And so what they're doing is just digging a pond. They'll use the dirt for construction, but every development out there digs a pond, so this is not anything unusual. It's very, very, very minor in nature.
Council, any questions or comments?
Question.
Okay, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number G8, please do so at this time. And I'll close public comment. I'll take it back to this council. Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Okay, we will now move to agenda item number H, which is the consent agenda. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 9, 10, 11, 12, or 13, please do so at this time. And when I'll close public comment, and I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number I, which is public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on items not on the agenda, please do so at this time.
Louis McCarthy, Palm Coast. Over the holiday, my niece came in from NYU, and she said she walked along the trail that she came before the city council. Kobe Kane, her name is, little short-lived. She ain't short no more, though, boy. But she said, I think the path is nice, except it's not complete. This is her words. It doesn't have lights. So I just wanted to relay that at least, even though she's in college, she's still looking at what's going on here and everything, you know, from Matanzas High School. She's was a graduate of Matanzas High School. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. See no one. I'll close public comment. Thank you for your comments, and I'm glad she came home for the holidays. It's nice. Nice to have them come home. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number J, which discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Vice Mayor Cuff.
I have nothing for this meeting, Mayor.
Okay. Council Member Clippis.
None, Ms. Mayor.
I do have two things. One, I got an email, and I guess you, Mr. Landon, you got copied on it too about the foot golf. Are we going to move forward on that or even have him come out and talk to us about that?
I turned it over to Alex. I'm not sure where we are on foot golf, and I don't see Alex right now.
Okay, I can get back in touch.
He can get back to you as to.
Okay. And the other thing was the lights on Lakeview. Are we doing anything?
Yes.
On that?
I know they were on order to do the little segment to do kind of a trial.
Not the FPNL path.
Okay.
I mean actual Lakeview.
Oh, Lakeview, yes. Yeah, I asked for an update on that last week. The design is complete. It has been submitted to FPNL first part of this month, I think the first week of this month. So FPNL has to obviously review it and approve it. As soon as that happens, then it will go out to bid. It won't go out to bid. It'll come back here because FPNL puts it up. But we'll have a contract between us and FPNL that will come to City Council. So it is moving forward, and the design is finished but needs to be approved.
Okay. Discussion, and I have nothing. Discussion by City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Discussion by City Manager of matters not on the agenda.
Cindy has sent me a couple of things that are kind of our annual events. One of them is our futures, men's futures tennis tournament, where we actually have the young professionals coming to Palm Coast January 26th through February 4th at our tennis center. That is always a highlight for anybody that enjoys watching tennis. And then she is trying to get everybody to put on their calendar the Birds of a Feather Fest. Now, always is tough for me to get right, February 9th and 11th, that weekend. So a lot of things, stay tuned, a lot of activities for kids, adults, not just going out and on our trails and doing bird watching, but a lot of activities here at City Hall and the like to people would like. So, but Mayor, with that, I have nothing further.
In that case, I move we adjourn.